Insurance. Some people call it a necessary evil. Most people don't like it and most people don't understand it, but I call it one of the most important parts of your financial plan, if not the most important part. Now, I know that's a little bit controversial, but hear me out during this episode, and we're going to talk about some of the biggest ways that you can really screw up your insurance program and potentially end up bankrupt or in severe financial hardship. Hope that you enjoy this episode. Welcome to the Weekly Wealth Podcast. I am Certified Financial Planner David Chudik. This podcast and my wealth management practice are both designed to help the mass affluent to live better lives by how they handle their money. We talk about financial strategies, prosperous mindsets, and simply how to build true wealth. So come on and let's enjoy this journey together. All right, everybody, we're talking insurance this week, and I want to talk about some ways that you can screw up or hopefully prevent you from screwing up your insurance. In my almost 20 years of being insurance licensed, I've kind of seen it all. So we're going to talk about some different types of insurance and what some of the major and most common mistakes are for each of the insurance types. So let's get started and let's talk number one about life insurance. Now, life insurance, the major point and the major purpose of life insurance is to provide a death benefit to loved ones at the time of death. And this death benefit can be used to pay for expenses, it can be used to pay off debt, and just keep the lifestyle of the surviving family from having to change after losing a loved one. So the first major mistake that I've seen with life insurance is not leaving a beneficiary. So when you apply for life insurance, there's a form and there's a place where you list a beneficiary. And a beneficiary is a person or an entity who will receive the death benefit when you pass away. So in a typical situation, a husband will name his wife as beneficiary on a life insurance policy. A wife will name her husband as a beneficiary on the life insurance policy. And you get the point. It's really, it's designed to help to determine who gets the money when the insured passes away. But if that form is left blank, if nobody is listed, then the money has to be made payable to the deceased's estate. So this creates a whole bunch of problems. Number one, that money has to go through probate, and probate can have a cost involved to it, and it also can take months or even years to finalize. And also, the money is not immediately available. So when a person is named as a beneficiary, typically the money is available to them very soon after the death. And oftentimes there are major expenses due after death, and the money is just very well needed. So make sure with your life insurance, you are naming a beneficiary. Now, number two is make sure that you're naming the correct beneficiary and keeping your beneficiaries updated. So if you're on a second marriage and you just didn't think to change your beneficiary and you pass away and your first spouse is listed as a beneficiary, in most states, there's not going to be really much of anything that can be done. And the first spouse will receive the death benefit, even though that probably was not the policy holder's intention. So the second mistake with life insurance that can be catastrophic is not keeping beneficiaries updated to reflect your wishes. And finally, and I've seen this one often, is not understanding your policy. So, and I'm particularly talking about universal life insurance policies. Now, universal life insurance policies are great tools. I actually personally have one on myself. So I think they're great tools. But they're very flexible and they have the ability for you to stop making premium payments or to reduce your premium payments. Now, for a while, that's not really a problem. But if you live long enough and as your cost of insurance starts increasing, you can risk your policy lapsing. So I've seen it where somebody got an index universal or universal life insurance policy back in the 90s, and maybe it was illustrated to get 10 or 11%, and it never did get 10 or 11% return inside of the policy because that's just not reasonable. And then maybe they also stopped making payments here and there, And then they get into their 60s and 70s, and the policy does not have enough cash value to survive, and it risks lapsing. And that's when they really need it the most. So if you have a universal life insurance policy, or if you have an indexed universal life insurance policy, having a review with your agent is very important. So talk about getting a reillustration that will ask when the policy will carry, at what point it might lapse. And if it does have a chance of lapsing, find out what monthly or annual payments you need to make in order to keep it in force and at least make these decisions on an educated basis. So looking at life insurance, let's number one, make sure that we have a beneficiary listed. Make sure that we have the proper beneficiary listed. And number three, if you have an index universal or a universal life policy, make sure that you're doing annual reviews. Make sure that you understand through reillustrations in your annual statements how long the policy will stay in force at the current funding rate so that you don't have any surprises when you get older. Oh, yeah, and here's a bonus. I've talked to a lot of people in my career and they said, oh yeah, I have life insurance through work. And yes, they might, but typically if you have life insurance through work, you may have one or two times your salary. And if you're young, let's say you're 25 or 30, and if you pass away and if you have young children, one or two times your salary does not necessarily support them for the rest of their lives. So group life insurance through work is a great thing, but make sure that it is enough to satisfy your death benefit needs. Let's move on to car insurance. I gotta be honest, I hate paying for my car insurance. It's no fun, I don't like it, but I know how important it is, and I know how likely it is that many of us during our lifetimes will cause a fairly major car accident. I also know that if I'm driving down the road, like no joke, maybe three or four or five or six, maybe seven people that pass me, they're not even looking close to the road. They're watching their phone, they're watching videos, they're texting and driving. So the roads are a dangerous place. So let's talk about some ways that you can really screw up your car insurance. So the first one is really just theoretical, and it's referring to car insurance as having full coverage. Full coverage doesn't exist. If you ever deal with someone who calls themselves an insurance professional and they use the words full coverage, just ask them, okay, so full means like everything, right? So am I fully covered? Is there anything that will ever not be covered? Is there any chance I would ever have to pay anything towards a claim if I have an accident or anything like that? And the answer is yes, of course. I mean, you'll have deductibles. You might choose not to have rental car coverage, in which case you'd have to pay for your own rental car. There are many parts of your insurance policy that are just not fully covered. So I say that to say that you should understand the options of your car insurance, understand some of the miscellaneous coverages, like, for example, rental car company. Typically in my area of the country, deer are very prevalent. So if I were to hit a deer and my car was in the shop for 2 weeks, maybe getting fixed, would I like for my car insurance company to pay for my rental car, or would I be okay paying for it myself, or do I maybe have an extra car in my family that I could drive during that time? So I'm definitely not telling you to carry every insurance coverage, but what I am telling you is to make the decisions intelligently and not by default. So number one is using the terms full coverage to assume that everything would be covered because it simply isn't. Number two is the liability portion of your auto insurance is just so incredibly important. And if you're part of the mass affluent or the high net worth that tends to listen to the Weekly Wealth podcast, the liability portion of your car insurance is protecting every dollar that you've ever had, every dollar that you have now, and every dollar that you will ever make. So make sure that you have very high liability limits, because if you were to, let's say, run a stop sign and you were to hit me and now I'm seriously injured, and maybe it's a horrible scenario and I am in a vegetative state or I'm paralyzed, guess who is responsible to take care of my damages and my medical bills? Well, it's you. So firstly, your insurance company, through the liability portion of your policy, is going to pay for my damages. But if the liability portion becomes what they call exhausted, meaning that it's paid out the limits of the policy, then you will be on the hook personally to take care of my damages, because in this hypothetical situation, you were at fault. So if you're in a high net worth or mass affluent scenario, you should have at least $300,000 of liability on your car insurance, because that's what's typically required in order to have an umbrella policy. And then you should have an umbrella policy in addition to your auto insurance of $1 million, $2 million, $3 million, $4 million. But what the umbrella insurance does is it basically kicks in once your car insurance has paid out to the limits. Typically, they're only a couple hundred dollars a year, and you would really kick yourself if you caused a major accident and you did not have high auto liability limits and an umbrella policy. And lastly, I hope I painted a big enough picture on how important your car insurance is. So with it being that important, I hope that you are not working through an 800 number. I hope that you have somebody local that you can talk to, a local independent insurance agent that you can talk to about some of these policy options so that they can help you to make the right decisions with your risk management for you. So using an 800 number as a main source of an insurance provider, not something that I would recommend. A lot of the listeners to the Weekly Wealth Podcast are business owners. So I wanted to take a few seconds to talk about some business insurance mistakes that you can make. Business insurance can be incredibly complicated, so make sure that you're, again, working with a good local agent that can help you to make the right decisions and navigate these waters, because there really are a lot of places where you can screw up. So the first one is like not being upfront with your agent and the carrier on what the scope of your business is. So oftentimes there are things called class codes, and your rate can be based on your class code for, let's say, your workers' comp insurance. So the more likely it is for a class of employee to have an accident, the higher their workers' compensation insurance is going to be. So there are businesses that, let's say, they advertise themselves as roofers. And obviously, it's not really hard to imagine injuries happening within a roofing scenario, but the roofing company may say or try to tell an insurance carrier that they only do like something that's less hazardous, like interior carpentry. And then what happens is somebody falls off of a roof and gets injured, and you have a major quandary. So in business insurance, your rates are often determined by a couple different factors. They're determined by a class code, which is kind of like very simply like, what do you do? What is the scope of your business? So make sure that you're upfront about that so a claim can't be denied. Your rates are also determined by some other factors like maybe gross sales or payroll. So make sure that you're being upfront on all of these things with your insurance carrier just to avoid any problems later on. And then secondly, it's similar to other types of insurance, but you just have to put some time into it so that you understand your risks and your exposures. So let me give you an example of something that you may or may not have ever thought of, or if you even know the answer to this question. What would happen if you own an office and one of your employees, they take their car and they're taking maybe the daily deposit to the bank. So they're on company time, they're doing a company errand, and on their way to the bank, this person causes a car accident. And let's say it's a bad car accident with high injuries. Do you know if your business is protected from that car accident? Would your business potentially have a financial liability there? Well, if you were carrying non-owned auto insurance, which is part of your business owner's policy or a freestanding coverage, you would probably be protected up until the limits of that coverage. So that's just one example of one exposure that as a business owner, you may not have ever thought of. So make sure that you're spending time learning about your business insurance and you're working with a competent insurance professional that can guide you through the process, because it is a pretty difficult process. And finally, if you're a fairly new business, maybe in your first few years, you are not able to get placed with a standard carrier. But now that you've been in business for a while and you have a positive loss history and a positive payment history, you may be able to get your agent or a different agency to write you now with a standard carrier that might have better coverage and more comprehensive coverage, but also might have significantly lower premiums. So if you've been in business for just a few years, when you're starting off, you oftentimes have to pay more with a non-preferred carrier. But once you get through your first few years, you might have to ask your agent to help them to put you with a preferred carrier. Let's step away from the podcast for just a moment. One of the services that I offer to my clients is help planning to exit their business. So as business owners, you're familiar with the challenges and complexities that come with steering your company day to day, but have you considered the transformative power of picturing your end game? So imagine having a destination so clear in your mind that every decision you make naturally aligns with it. To download our free ebook called The Endgame, go to my website, www.weeklywealthpodcast.com/endgame. That's www.weeklywealthpodcast.com/endgame. And okay, now let's get back to the podcast. Okay, so let's move on to homeowners insurance, and let's talk about some of the biggest goof-ups or mistakes or ways that you can just screw up your home insurance policy. So the first one is not understanding the difference between like what you could sell your home for and the reconstruction cost of your home. So your home insurance coverage is designed to indemnify you if your home is damaged or destroyed, and that means make you whole. So in my area, it might cost, let's say, $200 a square foot to rebuild a house. So on an upper end, nicer house. So a 3,000 square foot house might have a reconstruction cost of, let's say, $600,000. Now, if that 3,000 square foot house is on a double lake lot on the really nice lake in a classy neighborhood, it might have a sale price of $2 million, maybe $3 million, because the purchaser would be purchasing land in addition to the home. Well, the insurance company does not insure the land. So if that home burnt down, all the insurance company is going to do is pay to have it rebuilt, which in this case would be $600,000. There are some times where banks require that you carry a higher amount than what the house is worth or what the house would cost to rebuild, because there's a lot of land involved in the purchase. And that one gets a little bit sticky. And there are times where maybe your insurance agent needs to talk to the bank and explain to them what's going on. But the first one with home insurance is not understanding the difference between reconstruction cost and a potential selling price or market price. Number two, there are some exclusions that I've seen people just gloss over that they didn't know were there. An exclusion is just basically when a policy says they will not cover a specific action. Now, one that we see somewhat frequently are canine endorsements. So there are times, and there are some insurance carriers that just, they do not cover liability if your dog causes damage to somebody or something else. Now, this is neither good nor bad, but you need to know if it's on your policy. So if you have a big, mean dog, you probably, if you can avoid it, you don't want a home insurance policy with a canine liability endorsement that's going to not pay if your dog causes damages. Okay, so make sure that you're understanding some of the endorsements on your policy and the things that are or are not covered. Another thing that's never covered is flooding, unless you have a flood insurance policy. And flood is pretty much defined very loosely as either rising waters or horizontal waters. So if you live near the river and the river rises and it damages your house and your foundation, that's a case where you would need a flood insurance policy to cover that. So your plain old home insurance would not cover that. So hopefully you would have planned for that in the right manner. So home insurance and flood insurance are two different things that need to be purchased separately. And you and your agent should be working to understand if flood is a viable risk to your house. And finally, loss settlement provisions. So these get a little bit complicated, but replacement cost and actual cash value. If you see ACV on your policy declarations page, that means actual cash value. And that means you're going to be paid a depreciated amount to repair or replace either your home or that part of your home. So this is becoming more prevalent with roofs on many insurance policies, to where companies, instead of replacing your roof, they might give you an amount to pay a depreciated amount. So if they determine you have a 30-year roof and it's 15 years old and it gets damaged or destroyed, there are some scenarios where if you have ACV, actual cash value, the company will only pay half of the cost to replace a roof because you've already used half of your roof's lifespan. So again, like anything else, and you could see it's kind of a common theme in this podcast, is you got to spend some time. You have to understand your policy. You have to have somebody to whom you can ask questions about your insurance so that you know what's covered, what's not covered, where your risks are, and what should be covered. Where are the areas where you should be paying for additional coverage? And finally, the biggest mistake you can make in any of your insurance is just cutting corners way too much to get the price down as low as possible. So I get it. Times are tough for me. The dollar doesn't stretch as far as it has in the past for me, just like it doesn't for you. But in many cases with insurance, you're buying hundreds of thousands of dollars of coverage for dollars or pennies of cost. And if you cut that cost down too much, you might just be cutting your coverages to a point where you can be putting yourself at risk for financial loss. So what do you think? What do you think about insurance? Do you understand your insurances? I'd really like to know. So go to my website, www.weeklywealthpodcast.com, and click on the microphone icon and just let me know. Let me know some of your insurance questions. Let me know if you think insurance is important, if it's not important. If you could change anything about the insurance business, what would you change? This is kind of a fascinating topic, and it's something that a lot of financial advisors don't put a lot of time into helping their clients with. But I believe that protecting our nest eggs is very, very important. And as I say all the time, I believe that how we handle our money should positively impact our lives and the lives of those around us. And one way that we can have better lives is by reducing our financial stress. And one way that we can reduce our financial stress is to know that within reason, many of life's risks are properly prepared for. So I hope that you enjoyed this episode. Would love it if you would refer a friend, tell your friends about the podcast, tell your coworkers to like and subscribe so we can grow the audience. We're doing the best that we can to give valuable financial information to the masses out there. And until next episode, I wish everybody a blessed week. Investment advice offered through Parallel Financial, an SEC registered investment advisor, able to conduct advisory business in states where it is registered or exempt or excluded from registration. Contents contained herein are for informational purposes only and should not be construed as an offer or solicitation for investment advice or for the purchase or sale of any security, insurance, or other investment product.